This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Steve Stockton as we talk about strange things in the woods. If things have happened in the woods you want to check in with us about, go ahead and make that call, and also questions for him. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Steve Stockton with us, his latest book, Strange Things in the Woods. Steve, where do people pick your books up? Amazon, I'm sure?
Yeah, they're on Amazon for now. Just came out in paperback last week. They actually combined combined the first two books, which was Strange Things in the Woods and More Strange Things in the Woods, made it one volume. And then my third book is out in paperback, and that's My Strange World, which is my personal encounters. And you said something before we went to the break, talked about your son hearing something running in the woods.
Yes, something really heavy. I mean, he didn't think it was a person. He didn't think it was a bear. He knows animals. He didn't think it was a deer. But he just said, George, Dad, this thing was lumbering around, and it just sounded huge.
I'd like to tell you my experience that's very similar, if we've got a minute before.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Same area that I grew up on. We had 26 acres out in the country, and it was all wooded except for 5 acres, heavily wooded. And there was an old ditch line there that I used to play in, and found out later it had actually been the old dirt road through there dating back to Revolutionary War times. And I was in the woods one day, and I was up at the crest looking down into this ditch, and I heard something running in the leaves coming up out of the ditch. And I stepped back, and whatever it was, I couldn't see it, but I could hear it, and I could see the effect that it was having on things. It was like something was running. And again, like you're talking about there, the heavy footfall.
Mm-hmm.
I could feel the ground reverberating. And it was kicking up leaves in its wake, and it was coming right at me. But there was absolutely nothing that I could see. I mean, this was big. I mean, I could see the branches and things being knocked out of the way. And that's one of the few times in my life that I've actually been scared. There's 3 occasions. That's the first one. And I ran back down the hill screaming. I was 8 years old. And I was making such a commotion, my mom actually heard me and came out on the back porch to see what was going on. I ran past her and went in the bedroom, and I think I got under the bed. And Dad and brother got home from work. They went and looked. They could see where the leaves were disturbed. Nothing there. They, you know, quizzed me. And I grew up, I knew deer and bear and dogs. It was nothing that I could see, and it wasn't anything small like a mole or groundhog or anything like that, because it was affecting the trees several feet off the ground. And so I stayed away from there for a long time. And then flash forward about another 7 years later, this again right before we moved from there, I was 15. I was just kind of walking around the old place, having, you know, one last look around. I walked up there to the ditch, and same spot, looked back down in there, and I was just thinking, I wonder what that was that scared me when I was a kid. And as I turned to walk away, I heard a familiar noise, something running in the leaves. Turned around, exact same thing as 7 years prior. Something came up out of that ditch and was running towards me. I didn't scream and cry this time, but I didn't waste any time getting out of there. Now, flash forward about another 5 years, I was working in West Knoxville, and a guy that I just knew from work had invited me to a party. So I went to the party with him, didn't know anybody there but him, didn't really know him. Well, some of the girls there had found a Ouija board under the couch, and they wanted to get it out and play with it. So they're messing around with it, and they were going around the room asking people different questions. Well, when they got to me, I thought, I've got one for you. And the way I posed the question was, what scared me when I was a kid? That was, didn't, nothing else, just those words. Well, the board did its thing, moved around, spelled out two words, water, Sprite, WATERSPRITE.
Huh.
They're looking at me like, what, is it thirsty? Does it want a drink? I just shrugged my shoulders. Now, this was days before the internet, but the next day I went to the library and went to the reference desk, talked to the reference librarian. I said, what can you tell me about a water sprite or water spirit? And she fumbled around there and looked some things up, eventually came up with a book and showed me a picture of an elemental being called a naiad, which is also known as a water sprite or a water spirit. It's a feminine elemental that's a guardian of areas where there's fresh water springs.
Interesting.
Whatever. The odd thing about that, the property that we lived on, there were 7 natural springs on that one property that flowed into one that flowed into the lake about 300 yards away.
What new books are you working on now, Stephen?
I'm working on one about myths and legends of the Great Smoky Mountains. I've been working on it. I had a couple of years, I had to put it down. My brother passed away, and he's all in that book. He's probably just as experienced, if not more so, than I am in the legends and lore of the Smokies. And he was sort of helping me with some stories and things on it when he passed away. I shelved it for a while, but it's time to get it back out now. It's about 90% finished. I hope to have it out this summer.
All right, we'll have you back on when it's done, okay?
Oh, that'd be great.
Let's take some calls. Cheryl is in Texas on the Wild Card line. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much, George. I'm honored. Hi, Steve.
Hi there.
I've got something to share with y'all. It's something that you can see, so it's not a ghost. But I live in a senior property for seniors. We're all in fourplexes. And they didn't tell us before we moved in here that this used to be a wildlife habitat. And they moved the bobcats and the coyotes just a few feet from where my apartment is. That's where their dens are. And so they run all around. They run up on my porch. I survived a coyote attack this year, but I cracked my door. I want y'all to hear this. The first thing you're going to hear, it's going to sound like a woman screaming, and that is a lone coyote. And then afterwards, I put in the packs of coyotes, and this is literally at my front door. And so that's what I called in to let your listeners hear this.
All right.
Okay, here we go.
Here we go. What the world could that be, Stephen?
Well, I'm not sure, but she's right about big cats. Sometimes, particularly really big cats, like down south they call it a panther, although it's not really a panther, they will make a sound that sounds very similar to a woman screaming. And you talk about something making the hair stand up on the back of your neck, and you're out in the middle of the wilderness somewhere and hear what might be a scream. I mean, who knows? I said there are cats that do that, but then it could be somebody screaming as well.
This could be anything. We've heard Bigfoot sounds out there in the woods and everything. How about you? Have you heard any, even though you've never seen one, have you heard something out in the woods that could sound like a Bigfoot?
Yeah, particularly here in Washington State, just across the river from Portland, not too far up the road there in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest. It's just in the shadow of Mount St. Helens. I've heard some very unusual yips and yowls, and it doesn't sound like any animal in the woods that I'm familiar with. And I've heard some recordings of things that people purport to be Bigfoot, and it sounds very similar to what I've heard. And it was coming from different areas, like one would call and another would answer, maybe two more. And they sounded, described it as different sizes, like maybe one was a male adult, the other was a female, and then there's a younger one somewhere in there answering, too.
First-time caller, PA in Maryville, Tennessee, almost your old neck of the woods. Stephen, hi, PA.
Yes, sir. George, I've listened to Coast since 1997.
Thank you, sir, for staying with us so long.
I was wanting to tell Steve, I grew up in Cage Cove. I bet he knows where that is.
Oh, absolutely. Now, that's where my mom's family's all from when they immigrated over from Europe. They landed in Cage Cove.
Yeah. Well, see, all my people was born there. I'm 82 years old, so I grew up there. And I could tell you some tales.
You better.
Yeah.
Give us one.
Well, during the war, there was no school, so I didn't go to school for 2 or 3 years because they shut all the schools down, the churches, and everything. And my mother taught me everything, you know?
Yeah.
And there's all my people's where, you know, where the Primitive Baptist Church is.
I'm sure Steve does. I don't.
Yep.
Yeah. And,
what happened there?
Oh, that's where we all, that's all my people were buried there.
Yeah, some
ghostly thing in the cemetery out that way?
My side of the family, the Sparks.
No, but there's a road that after you leave us, Primitive Baptist Church, it's called, people used to ride horses down through there, and this lady jumped on the back of the horse behind the guy riding, behind the saddle. She'd ride till they got down to that creek, then she'd jump off.
She was a ghost?
Yeah.
Whoa, did you ever hear that one, Stephen?
Yeah, I have heard that legend where the rider would feel somebody jump on the back of the horse until they got to the water, and that's the legend that a ghost can't cross moving water, so she'd hop off. But, yeah, Cades Cove in particular and the north shore of Fontana Lake are the two most reportedly haunted areas in the Smokies. So, yeah, Cades Cove has got all kinds of strange and spooky things going on there.
And geographically, where are exactly the Smoky Mountains?
They're on the border between East Tennessee and Western North Carolina.
And is it a widespread area?
Yeah, it's huge. It's very large national park, and it just happens to be the most visited national park in the U.S.
And what makes it so unusual? What do you think happened there a long time ago to make it so strange?
Well, the Cherokee are all throughout there, and they've got a story for everything. They have a lot of stories about different battles with other tribes, and then they also believe in little people. There's a Cherokee legend of little people in the Smokies, like gnomes and fairies and elves and things like that. There's fairy lights and spook lights. They have the legend of Spearfinger, who was a witch that prowled the woods there in the Smokies and stole children or ate their livers. A lot of dark legends there, and there are places there that just they will not go, that there was something they think that was there from the dawn of time. There's just, they talk about the ground being sour. And the book you mentioned earlier, We Are All Children in the Wilderness of the Afterlife, that was actually co-authored with Cisco Murdoch. That's her book.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of came along and did color commentary, but she talks about that. She's Lenape and Cherokee, and talks about there are just places where there's always been something off there, whether it's, you know, kind of think of an H.P. Lovecraft type thing, that the elders, or the old ones, you know, that something that's been there way before man came along that's still there and has a malevolence to it.
Since you've been doing this, have you personally been scared about anything?
Well, the story that I just told you about something chasing me through the woods.
That scared you.
Scary one. And then another instance, a friend and I, he lived out in the middle of nowhere. The driveway to get to the house was like 2 miles long. His father was a full Cherokee. And we witnessed something there that I've been told was either like a Wendigo or a skinwalker or something like that. It looked sort of like a man, but with the head of a horse, but it wasn't actually a head. It was like the skull, but it had antlers of some sort or something on the top of its head. And the eyes, instead of being on the sides of the head like a horse, were on the front, and they were huge. And that scared the daylights out of us.
Did you ever hear the Chicago area ghost story of something called Resurrection Mary, of a vanishing hitchhiker? Did you ever hear that one?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a tale like that in the Smokies, the vanishing hitchhiker of Roaring Fork. almost the same. It's kind of an archetype story in urban legends where people driving through that area, Roaring Fork Motor Trail. It's a very scenic drive there in the Smokies, particularly in the fall when you have all the foliage. And people pick up a hitchhiker, young girl. She's usually barefoot, even in the wintertime. She directs them on where to go. They get there, and she suddenly vanished from the car. And they go to the door. Same story. An elderly woman opens the door. They, you know, say, well, I brought this girl here, and she just suddenly not here anymore. And the lady shows them a picture. Like, yeah, that's her. And it was a daughter that had passed away farther down the road, and she's forever still trying to make her way back home. And then there's another variant of that where they give a ride, and she gets out and said, no, this, you just let me out here, and happened to be in front of a cemetery. They go back looking for her, can't find her, and a coat she's borrowed will be found folded up on her grave.
Next up, we go to Joe in Long Island, New York. Joseph, go ahead.
Hi, Steve. I don't think I want to meet my doppelganger in the woods, but
no, not at all.
I have a little story. Hiking on a Highline Trail, I was with two other people, a girl and a Native American Blackfoot that was the chef at the hotel I worked at. Now, coming back on this trail, I was ahead of them by a few, you know, 10 yards or something like that. And they see me running back, and they think I'm running from a bear. But there was a moose about a ton on the trail. Now, that's the problem. How do you, if you have to get back and you have an animal in front of you, then you're stuck. How do you move? Now, it's almost like if you're in an ocean and there's a shark between you and the shore. You don't want to back up. Now, so by staying there, this was the most densely populated area in the United States, supposedly, for bears, this particular valley. So you want to proceed. So I didn't know what to do. The Native American chef did a horse whisperer thing with it. He communicated with this moose spiritually, and 20 minutes later, it got up and moved away, and then we could proceed. But if I hadn't been with him, if I had been just with the girl, I might have been stuck where I the rest of the evening in a densely populated area of bears. So my question would be, Steve, what happens if you're trying to get back on a trail and an animal blocks your way, such as a bear?
You go the other way.
The other way, or go at an angle or at a tangent. You mentioned, you know, swimming and having a shark between you and the shore. I've got caught in a riptide before, and you kind of have two choices. You can let it wash out to sea, or you can swim against it, and you're just going to wear yourself out. But you can swim along with it, kind of along at the same angle on the shore, and you may end up a couple miles down the beach. That's what happened to me, but I didn't get washed out to sea. Kind of the same thing. And when I hike now, I always carry a personal locator beacon just in case, and I have a GPS.
And that's really smart to do, Steve. And if, of course, you see a bear in the middle of the road coming your way, feet don't fail me now. We're going to come back and take final calls with Steve Stockton in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Steve Stockton with us, our final segment here of Phone Calls with Steve, as we talk about his latest book, of course, which is called Strange Things in the Woods. And he's got a couple of YouTube channels. One of them is called 13 Past Midnight. The other is Missing Persons Mysteries. And those are linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com as well. Are you're online as well, or just the YouTube channel, Steve?
Just the YouTube channels. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, like I mentioned. Don't have any kind of web presence other than that right now. I do have a really nice group on Facebook called High Strangeness. Hi to Zuri, Nicole Williams, my Tennessee homegirl. Hope she's listening tonight. She set that up basically around me. But maybe a website at some point, a blog, something like that. I'm having fun with the narrations and writing the books now.
What When we talk about strange things in the woods, have you ever encountered cults or anything like that? Groups of people, vampire type folks doing strange things in the woods?
I've seen evidence of what might be that, but sometimes, you know, it's hard to tell if it's really serious practitioners or if it's just, you know, some heavy metal kids out having a fun time in the woods and, you know, leaving satanic or cult-like graffiti. And I've got some stories in my books like that where one person found a place in East Tennessee where apparently there'd been an animal sacrifice. And the way he found it, there were markers in the shapes of arrows made out of logs. And he followed the logs and found this huge pentagram out in the woods and kind of got spooked. When he got back to his car, somebody had written the word beware across the windshield in mud. So, yeah, he got out of there and didn't go back.
Back to the calls. Roger in Tennessee. Hey, Roger, go ahead.
Well, good morning, George. Steve, how are y'all?
Morning. Great.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I was going to relate a story to you that occurred in West Virginia while I was camping probably about 12 years ago. The particular area that we camp in, they say that they have a lot of Bigfoot sightings and other paranormal events. We've heard some weird screeches in the woods before, but this particular incident, it was late spring, and it had just rained, and we were sitting around the campfire, and most of my buddies had already turned into the cabin to get some shut-eye, but we the ridge that we camp on, you can see the trail from way up high. We noticed headlights coming up the trail, and we thought, well, maybe this is one of our buddies from town coming up to visit us, and so we're waiting. We can hear it traversing through the trails and winding around the mountains and stuff. And so before you get to the cabin, there's a real high ridge, and I could see clearly two round headlights. So I assumed it was a Jeep and one of our friends. So we wait and wait and wait. And finally, there's no more headlights. There's no more engine noise. And we find that very strange. So we go up the trail and find absolutely zero tracks in the mud.
Nothing.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Nothing, right?
Nothing at all. And it's a very narrow trail. There's no way that somebody could have turned around. And we went to that high ridge before the cabin and saw absolutely no sign of a vehicle being there. And we know that we saw those headlights at that particular point.
How do these things happen, Stephen?
George, you got me. Your guess is as good as mine. There's several different theories that, you know, that there's portals out there in the woods, interdimensional things that go on. There's supernatural explanations. That's a popular theory. And then there's some people that think the government is somehow involved with some kind of secret black bag operations with true stealth technology where they can become invisible, whether people or vehicles or whatever. So anything's possible. The fun is in the hunt. I think finding the answers would kind of spoil it. It's more fun to search down these legends and mysteries and things, for me anyway.
Are people still camping a lot in the woods as opposed to 10 years ago?
I think so, but I think with a lot of what you hear now about all the people that go missing and never found, no trace found, or when they are found, sometimes it'll be in an area that was previously searched, and then here's the remains in that area. Don't know how that happens. I think people are more cautious now. They're just, with the advent of the internet, it's made the world smaller in that sense that things get passed around more. And I think they're camping probably just as much, if not more, but they're more cautious. I know a lot of people that carry those emergency locator beacons like I do now that have a GPS and a backup with them, that when they do go into the woods, they take precautions. Even if you're going on a short hike, take a day or two's worth of food and water if you can, because you never know.
Like this little Dennis Martin kid who disappeared going around a bush. If a wild animal grabbed him, it would make a noise, wouldn't it?
Well, you would think so. The kid would have cried out, or the animal would have made a noise. There would have been a disturbance, signs of a struggle. He probably would have lost shoes or clothing, or blood evidence. Nothing like that. And that's not uncommon. That's the weird thing. These people, it's literally like they just disappeared into the mountain or went straight up something and just no trace.
How close was he to his parents when he disappeared?
Just within a few yards. His dad was sitting there and actually watched
him. Unbelievable. Like 6 feet?
Yeah. And then same with the Trini Gibson disappearance also happened in the Clayman's Dome area, the Great Smokies in 1976. She was on a field trip from Bearden High School. And oddly enough, she lived in the same Bearden neighborhood where Dennis had gone missing in 1969. But she was on the trail ahead of some of her friends. She'd walked ahead. They saw her kind of bend down, look off the trail like she was looking at something. She stepped off the trail and was never seen again. No signs of a struggle, no scream. They've scoured the woods. Dogs lost the scent. That's another common thing. Dogs, bloodhounds, things that are used to finding people will just totally lose the scent, just lay down and refuse to go any farther.
So let's go to let's go to Debbie in Sutherland, Oregon. Hey, Deb, go ahead.
Hey, hello, George. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
Hi there.
I've got a story here, and it's the first time I've ever told anyone this. Steve, I wonder if you've ever encountered this. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can.
Yeah, sure can.
Okay. About, this is 2008, I went to visit some friends in Shelton, Washington, and they live actually outside Shelton, about 5 miles. They're surrounded by woods. And we were taking a walk one day in their forest, and we came to a clearing, and there were some dead branches on the ground, and there was this massive black thing, and to me it perceived to have wings. And as we entered this small clearing, we startled whatever this thing was, and it flew off the branch. I mean, it was so black. And as soon as I saw this thing, I was heading in the other direction, and my friend was yelling at, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And I said, "Didn't you see that?" And she said she didn't see anything. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Yeah, I've heard similar stories. In fact, I had a kind of similar experience not too far outside of Vancouver, Washington, in a, it was a suburban area, somewhat residential, but there was some kind of black, and it was like you're mentioning, it was just blacker than black, almost like it didn't exist. It was that kind of black, you know, that blotted out the streetlights when it passed by. Now, I know there's some big birds and things out there. There's sandhill cranes, and there's giant owls and even eagles and things like that. But whatever this was huge. But I don't know of anything that is entirely just like a matte black, like underground in a cave with no light type inky blackness. So there may be some sort of winged cryptid in Washington. So like I said, that's where I saw it. I've heard similar stories. There's some back east. I've heard that in New Jersey. People talk about the Jersey Devil, but there's some kind of winged cryptid there. You've got the Mothman stories from West Virginia. And now there have been a lot of recent sightings of winged cryptids in the Chicago area.
Let's go to Boston. Paul's with us now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, George. Boy, what quite a night again.
Just starting, kid. Just starting.
I used to have to lock up a warehouse at night. And we had four rooms, and they totaled probably about 800,000 square feet between the four separate rooms. And, of course, there's loading bays and stuff that you got to lock up and set alarms on. And only on a Thursday night, I get to one bay, one room, and I would have an entity that would follow me. Never saw it, but I knew it was there.
You could feel it, couldn't you?
And about, it stayed always around 75 feet away. Until I came through a series of double doors where we'd get a little bit closer, maybe about 15 feet. But as long as the doors were locked, it stayed there. And it never had it before, except we had a tremendous thunderstorm one summer, and lightning all over the place, and the water table got so saturated that the water was coming up through the floors. And it was an old it's old country up there, so it must have been a Civil War or a Civil War burial ground, or probably in some places we still had some of the walls left there. You know how they were cordoned off the fields, and
that's right.
We didn't know if somebody, a body or somebody's soul was disturbed, but that was funny to have it like that. It never bothered me, but it was always there, only on a Thursday night.
Jeez. What is it about these strange places of cemeteries and places where people died, Steve, that just creates these ghostly apparitions?
I think there's an energy left behind. St. John said the dead don't come back, but sometimes they stay. And I think that's a very profound statement. But there's something about battlegrounds, and in particular Civil War battlegrounds. Now, I've been Revolutionary War. I've been, when I was in Vietnam, I visited Hamburger Hill. I visited some of the battlegrounds in Europe. But there's just a totally different feeling about the Civil War battlegrounds, particularly Chickamauga at Fort Oglethorpe there in Georgia. That is the strangest place. There's been sightings of entities and things there by people that work in the park. In the book that Cisco and I, that I co-authored with her, she talks about stuff that happened at Gettysburg, and then she had another Revolutionary War tale about a house that she lived in. But there's something, and I think it was because it was the first time that we were the enemy. It was truly brother against brother. On my dad's side of the family, I had relatives that fought on each side in the Civil War, and I think it just, I don't know, there's just something in particular about that, that it carries a heavier presence, and there's a darker feeling to those Civil War battlefields.
Let's grab a call with Travis in Denver, Colorado. Travis, go ahead, sir.
Hi, George, Steve. Glad to be with you guys.
Hi.
So I've got kind of a weird story. So I was camping with some friends, and what I now gather was probably the Echoco National Park or thereabouts in Oregon. This was 2 years ago. And so a buddy of mine and I, we had gotten together a few of our friends, and we were all camping down in the woods. And we went to the official campground, but, you know, we're young. We're, you know, 24 and so. We had our beers with us, and we decided we'd hike a couple miles off of the official campgrounds. And we realized when we got there, well, one of the girls left her phone back in the car. You know, we'd left a couple things back in the car. So even thinking, you know, oh, well, there's Bigfoot out here and stuff, we figured we wouldn't send one person up to the car. We would send at least two of us. So I was one of the two that had to go back up to the car. When we got to the car, got everything that we were supposed to get, and came back to the campground, everything was completely disarrayed, just everything thrown astray. And inside one of the tents off to the side, maybe 30, 40 yards from us, there was something shuffling in there, and it was making loud kind of guttural grunts and just, you know, huffing and heaving. And we thought maybe it was one of the other guys camping with us, maybe messing with us, or, you know, somebody maybe playing a trick on us. But we just kind of carried on and walked over to the lake, and there was everybody that we were camping with, not a soul missing.
Jeez.
And so something, and I promise you, this was not a bear. My buddy that was with me is a park ranger up in Oregon. I mean, he's like, if this was a bear, it is not a bear that is native to Oregon.
All right. It sounds like to me it was a Bigfoot, to be sure. Travis, thanks. Steve, thank you. Keep in touch with us when your next book's out. Let's get you back on. We will be back in a moment with Open Lines here on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, I'm going to throw this out your way. I want this to be Weird Night. In addition to your Open Line calls, Weird Night. What's the weirdest story you've ever encountered? I'll be back.